Hi, everybody. This is Ramble Redhead Show, and today we do have a special guest, and her name is Luann Anderson, and she is the Illinois Division Coordinator of the part of the National Ovarian Cancer Coalition Incorporated. Say that five times real fast. And what I wanted to do today is we're going to be doing a series of different topics, not only on ovarian cancer, but also breast cancer, as well as testicular cancer, as well as prostate cancer. And see, today I'm talking with Luann about ovarian cancer. And the reason why I'm doing this today is because it's kind of a in memorial to in honor of a very good friend. My ex's mother had unfortunately passed away in 2001 due to ovarian cancer. And what had happened was I had recently talked with a doctor that I work with, and he had mentioned, and he was wearing a wristband that honors those people who are afflicted by this disease. And what I wanted to do is to get one of those, and I found out about this coalition, and I wanted to do a show today to talk about it, so that maybe, you know, the listeners who have family members who you know, might be at this particular age group that might be a possible candidate for this, so you can get an idea of what the symptoms and what the things to look for, and then of course what you can do to find help. And so what I'd like to do is just thank you for your time ahead of time, and I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at rambleredhead@gmail.com, as well as you can go to my website, which is rambleredhead.blogspot.com, for more information. I'll have links to the website. And what I'd like to do is thank Luann for being on the show, and thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome, and I'm very grateful to be here, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about ovarian cancer. I could first start out talking and telling you about why I am involved with NOCC and really my personal journey with ovarian cancer. Like you, I had a very dear friend who was affected by the disease with basically little or no knowledge of the disease. It was one of those things where we were supposed to go out the day after Thanksgiving to go shopping, and she said, you know, I really can't go. I have to go to the doctor. I'm feeling really bloated. And I, you know, but I'll be ready to go about 1 or 2 in the afternoon. Called me at 1 in the afternoon and said, I can't go shopping because I've got to go have a thing called a CAT scan. And we didn't even know what that was. It sounded kind of cool, but didn't know about it. By 6 that evening, her husband was at our front door telling us that she had advanced ovarian cancer and had to have surgery a week from the day later. And when she did have her surgery a week later, she was diagnosed with advanced stage 3C ovarian cancer. And they had told her at that time if she would have waited even one more week, she would have only lived through the end of the year.
Wow.
So we were, it was very unfortunate. We were very lucky that she did have a very successful first surgery of debulking and underwent her chemotherapy at that time and really worked with her on that. So that's really what we and how I got involved with it, kind of firsthand knowledge. And because she had her treatment down at Northwestern in the University of Chicago, and I worked downtown at the time, I was with her really throughout the entire fight with ovarian cancer. She fought for 5 years, even undergoing a stem cell procedure that was experimental at the time, but really had no remission from the disease, and succumbed almost about 4.5 years after her initial diagnosis. So I made a commitment to her during the last stages of her journey, and also to myself, that I would try and fight this disease however I could for not only her but all women. So that a few years later, after she passed away in 1996, I started looking for ways to get involved and found the National Ovarian Cancer Coalition and joined the Illinois Board at its formation about 8 or 9 years ago. And so I've been involved with it since then.
Okay, great. And, well, can I ask how old your friend was?
At the time of diagnosis, she was just about to turn 40, which is very, very young for diagnosis of ovarian cancer, which has a normal prognosis or a median prognosis of age 60. And so that's why when women are in their 40s and 30s and 40s, it's actually a very unusual diagnosis. So she was very young, and she when she passed away, I believe she was just turned 45.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So.
And so obviously you're doing this in honor of your friend, and what was her name?
Judy.
Judy.
And I'm doing it in honor of her, and actually of all women. It's ironic how when you get involved with something like this, it kind of your whole world. You see it everywhere you go. It's kind of like when we got a dog. Suddenly there's a million dog commercials on TV. It's like
right.
That. You know, and it's like, oh wait a minute, I never even saw a dog commercial before this. And it's kind of the same thing because once Judy had her diagnosis, I thought, my goodness, the woman who was my mentor for my internship when I was in college died from ovarian cancer. And then, you know, I knew another young girl that was diagnosed. So it's just interesting how you can, you know, really open your eyes to it, how you really do see it's much more prevalent than you ever thought before.
Okay. Well, you know, as the division coordinator, I was just wondering, can you tell us a little bit about what your duties are with the organization?
Sure. As I mentioned, when I first got involved with NOCC, I joined the board of directors as a volunteer, attending monthly meetings and coming up with initiatives on how to get involved with getting the word on ovarian cancer. And that included things like doing presentations on the disease, going out and attending health fairs, and then being involved in our Walk for the Whisper, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But it was really to just do it on a voluntary basis, just to kind of get the word out. I did that for about 5 years, and when I left my full-time job downtown, also decided to take a break from involvement on the board at that time as well. Took about a 9-month break and came back to help on the walk, to just volunteer on the event. And as I told you earlier, kind of just got sucked in and have never left since then. So I've actually been an employee for almost 3 years with NOCC. Actually, it is just 3 years.
Okay,
so I'm actually involved as the division coordinator for the entire Illinois division. And that what that means is answering the phones, answering all the emails, getting the word out, and plus running all of the special events.
Okay, great. And what I'd like to do, if we could try to help inform the listeners a little bit about basically what are some type of symptoms or things that if a woman was experiencing, what type of things to look for?
Well, and I think that's the key, because unlike breast cancer, most women are not aware of ovarian cancer or its signs and symptoms. And that's our goal, really, is to reverse the trend. We're right now about 80% of the women, unfortunately, are diagnosed with ovarian cancer, don't have a survival rate of 5 years or more, where with breast cancer, it's the complete opposite. It's very rare to hear of somebody who's diagnosed with breast cancer and who succumbs to it right away. Usually they're able to fight the disease for a long time, and that's our goal, is to do that. And we can do that by talking about and really reviewing the symptoms for ovarian cancer. And the biggest symptom and the one that is most pronounced is pelvic or abdominal pain or discomfort and bloating. And if you ask any woman, they'll tell you that happens every month. It happens every day, depending on what you eat, really.
Right.
And so that's a very vague symptom. But really, I think a better definition is a feeling of fullness. Like all of a sudden your pants don't fit. That was the one comment that my friend made after she was diagnosed. She said, well, didn't you notice I had to buy pants that were 2 sizes bigger? And I didn't honestly notice. It was winter. I don't usually go around checking, but now I might, actually, if it's if we can help. But it was really that her stomach had become so bloated, none of her clothing fit.
Wow.
And that's a very, very common symptom. But instead of going to the doctor, what we tend to do is go and buy bigger sweatpants or pants with, more elastic in the waist.
Right.
Because, again, that unfortunately is a symptom of middle age for most women. So, but it is a feeling of fullness is really the symptom. And it's not just a one-time thing. So if you go out and eat lasagna and you have a feeling of fullness, it's not the same as suddenly have a feeling of fullness morning till night. Or all of, every day instead of just 1 or 2 days in a row.
Would it be a certain period of time?
It doesn't even have to be a certain period. We say longer than 2 weeks, you should really go and talk to your doctor, especially if it just comes up out of the blue. One of the survivors I talked to a couple years ago said that it just came up literally out of the blue.
Right.
She went on vacation, came home, none of her clothes fit, and she went on a cruise, so she thought maybe I ate too much. But 2 weeks later, when nothing else had happened and it continued, that's when she went to the doctor. So not to waste too much time. But, a feeling also of gas and indigestion, nausea. Again, common symptoms of a lot of other diseases, but things that you want to take seriously and take to your doctor. Frequency or urgency in urination, and absence of an infection, and also a change in bowel habits, which are also symptoms of other cancers as well. Unexplained weight gain or weight loss, but more importantly, weight gain. Because with ovarian cancer, one of the symptoms is, and one of the reasons why you get swelling is because your belly is becoming distended with fluid. So you're retaining more fluid, and that's putting on the pounds. So again, unexplained weight gain or loss, and also unusual fatigue. So that's another thing that people talk about, and that is that they're just so exhausted that they can hardly function, and that's just a sudden onset. And so, again, all of these symptoms, if you took these just with nothing and walked into your doctor, they'd probably give you that purple pill they advertise for, whatever that's called. But we want women to take this seriously and say, this came up out of the blue. Mm-hmm. And to start, if they do have these symptoms, to start with their gynecologist. And to go in and to ask about this disease. And it's something that when women, going to the gynecologist is hard enough.
Right.
But going to the gynecologist and talking about these things is very difficult. And we have symptom cards and we have tools that can help women as they go into their doctors.
Okay.
To help them have a better and greater awareness. And so if you do, have these symptoms and do go into the doctor, one of the things we ask is to ask for a full pelvic exam. Ask them to examine your ovaries. And one of the ways they do that is through a rectovaginal exam. And different from the regular vaginal exam, they go through and they can feel up and better and more effectively feel the ovaries by going up through the rectum and pressing down on the abdomen to really feel the ovaries, which are only, when they're healthy, the size of a small almond. So they're not very large, and that really is the most effective way. So to make sure that they do check your ovaries and look for those symptoms. And if they do suspect anything, there are some tests that they can order. One of those things is a transvaginal ultrasound, which is an internal ultrasound, different from a traditional belly rub.
Mm-hmm.
It is an internal scope that allows them to really look at the size and really the whole scope of the entire ovary and abdominal cavity. And that's
now,
a very effective
test. Is there a lot of discomfort
test.
With these type of tests?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I've had them. Unlike most people, I ask questions. So I know the one time I went in and she started to do one of these tests, I was like, whoa, wait a minute, you're in the wrong area. You know, you're like, hold on, what are you looking for? But if you ask questions, they'll tell you. And that's what she, you know, that's what my doctor told me, is they're trying to feel your ovaries. They want to see what's down there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, with the transvaginal ultrasound, it isn't uncomfortable. It's awkward. It's really, really awkward because, you know, that's just something that normally we don't undergo. But it's a really neat test because you can actually look at the screen and watch it. And,
wow.
You know, he showed me. He was like, look at this. This is an ovary and this is what. And so I think it's very neat. It's not, but there's no pain associated with any of it at all. So they're invasive, but they don't hurt. And the third test that can be used in a diagnosis of ovarian cancer, when ovarian cancer is suspected, is called a CA125. And the CA125 is a blood test that goes after and looks for a specific protein that shows up in the blood that in some women who are diagnosed with ovarian cancer is elevated. It doesn't happen in every single case of ovarian cancer, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you have ovarian cancer. So it's not in itself a screening tool for ovarian cancer, but it is one of the three tests that's used in helping to diagnose ovarian cancer.
What I'd like to do is just ask you another quick question I think is very important is, you know, what can women do to prevent getting this type of condition?
Well, that's a really good question because as much as we can to let women know what they should do to prevent it or to avoid it, that would be wonderful. One of the things is use of oral contraceptives. It has been found that women who use oral contraceptives that ultimately end up preventing ovulation are at much greater reduction in risk of ovarian cancer, as much as 40 to 60% risk reduction for ovarian cancer. So the use of oral contraceptives for a total of 5 years, it has not been conclusive that it's more effective either more or less than that, but that's the testing that's been done. That's one of the things that that can do that. It is a risk reduction for ovarian cancer. Another risk reduction thing is breastfeeding or pregnancy. Women with multiple pregnancies and also women who have breastfed, again, because the theory is that it stops ovulation and hence, you know, can stop ovarian cancer. Now, again, I've known many women who've had multiple children and have still developed ovarian cancer, but they've developed it much after the age of 60. So, but, you know, just for in general for women, that's one of the things. Another one is tubal ligation, and that is a surgical procedure. Again, and the thought is to prevent the egg from traveling through the fallopian tube and getting into the system. And if a woman is at high risk for ovarian cancer, and that would be somebody who maybe has it in their family or has a history of breast cancer and ovarian cancer in their family, a hysterectomy may be the answer. Now, just because you've had a hysterectomy, even having your ovaries removed does not mean that you will not develop it, because if you do have the gene and it has already gotten into your system, you could still develop it down the road, but it greatly reduces the risk. The other thing that we're finding with women, especially with the BRCA, the breast cancer gene defect, is an oophorectomy, which is the removal of the ovaries. But it's important for women to understand, and particularly older women who maybe have had a hysterectomy years ago, to understand that a lot of women who have hysterectomies don't necessarily have their ovaries removed. So you need to know what you had done when you had a hysterectomy. Did they remove your ovaries or not? And if they didn't, to know that risk. It's still there if you have it. So those are really the biggest things that we can do to reduce our risk.
Okay, well, one of the next questions, obviously, you mentioned a little bit, you know, is this type of cancer hereditary? And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, and that's something that a lot of women are afraid of and concerned about. And there, we're finding there is there could be, and it definitely is now, an inherited risk with a defect in the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes that increases the risk of developing ovarian cancer from between 13% to 50%. So it's important to know if you do have a first degree relative, that being a mother, father, sister, or daughter who's either had breast, prostate, ovarian, or colon cancer. that they know what that risk is and that they communicate that risk factor and that family history with their physicians.
Okay. And, you know, just to go over some other facts that I found online as well as from your information here is that basically that all women are at risk and that symptoms do exist and can be extremely vague yet increase over time. And the key thing is, like with any other type of disease, is that early detection increases the survival rate of an early stage disease. And one thing that I think women should also know is that a pap smear does not detect ovarian cancer. But what I was wondering, you mentioned already the types of diagnostic tests that can be used to detect it. But what I was wondering is then, once it has been detected, could you give us a little overview of what the treatment options would be for that?
Well, sure. And I think that you hit on something very important, and that is that while a pap smear does not detect ovarian cancer, it in itself is a test that benefits ovarian cancer in that when you go in to get your pap smear, you go in and you have a physical exam. And so I never, ever want to dissuade someone from having a pap smear simply because it doesn't detect ovarian cancer. So thank you for bringing it up. But a pap smear can detect cervical cancer, and you do get your exam during that time as well. So that's a good test from the standpoint that you do get a physical exam with it. But once ovarian cancer is diagnosed, there are many treatment options. But even before getting diagnosed, if there's a suspicion of ovarian cancer, or if your gynecologist has suspected that you have ovarian cancer, the one thing that we recommend of all women is to go to a gynecologic oncologist. And that is a gynecologist who has gone to college to also be a cancer professional, but specifically of female reproductive issues. And that there was a study recently released that said that the chance of total debulking and treatment of this disease is increased exponentially when treated by a gynecologic oncologist. So if possible, at all possible, to get to a gynecologic oncologist. And the reason is because when they go in and do their surgery, they can do a full debulking, which means they will remove as much of the area that they can that is affected, and also so that they can see where disease residue remains, if it does in fact remain in the cavity, so that they can then establish a treatment plan that can include either chemotherapy along with radiation treatment, and also as a follow-up plan for what, you know, the disease if it does recur. And unfortunately, you know, ovarian cancer can recur, and so it's very important to have that treatment plan and know what that can possibly be down the road.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for that information. But one thing I'm just, when I was doing some research online, that I found out that the National Ovarian Cancer Coalition basically was only founded about 10 years ago. And so, and you know, just for my listeners, it was founded by a person by the name of Gail Hayward, and she was a long-term ovarian cancer survivor. And basically, she's been committed to educating and building awareness for about ovarian cancer. And so this particular organization is the leading ovarian cancer public information education organization in the United States. And so for any of you who might look for some more information, you can call 1-888-OVARIAN. And what they do is they maintain the most comprehensive website for ovarian cancer support in the world, and that is www.ovarian.org, O-V-A-R-I-A-N.org. And they have built a network of many state divisions, which, of course, I'm talking with her today from the Illinois one. And so it's been a very prestigious group of people, and they have a lot of researchers and physicians that are on this. And, you know, they want to do what they can to fight this disease. And so what I'd like to do is ask you, what can the people who are listening to the show, what can they do to get involved with the program?
Well, I think the greatest thing that any listener, any woman or man can do to help us get involved is help us spread the word on ovarian cancer. And to do that, you can contact us for a free resource of information. We have brochures that talk about the disease. We have symptom cards that are the size of a business card that you can slip into your wallet, and I recommend every woman carry one of those. So when you go to the doctor, it's not so awkward to talk about it. Say, hey, you know what? I learned about this disease. Here are the symptoms. Can we talk about it? That's one of the things that we're trying to do, is to get women to talk about it. And the other thing is to help us spread the word and help us get information out into the community. So if you have a community group that you're involved with, or any kind of group that you're involved with, we'd be happy to come and talk about it again to help us increase awareness about ovarian cancer.
Okay, great. And so basically, again, any of you who are listening who would like to get more information can go to the website. Again, it's www.ovarian.org, and you can find out about your state and what's available. I was just curious, for some of my international listeners, is there any type of international program right now that maybe people could go to? Do you know of?
You know, that's a very good question. I don't know that NOCC is involved internationally, but I know that we have affiliations internationally. And so if anyone were interested, they could definitely contact our national office, and we'd be happy to help them get connected.
Okay, great. And see, one of the things, obviously, is that, you know, they do want to increase the public awareness and education about this disease. But see, the one thing that you can do if you'd like to, obviously, you know, I personally had, you know, unfortunately lost someone very dear to me due to this disease. And so that's why I wanted to do the show today to, you know, again, bring awareness. But there are a lot of opportunities for helping the NOCC, which, again, is the National Ovarian Cancer Coalition. And there's a lot of different ways. And one of the things you can do is to, you know, make a donation to them. Another thing, if you unfortunately had lost someone, you can make a tribute gift in that honor of that special person. And also, you might want to check with your employer to see if there might be an opportunity where they can match the gift that you make. So, for example, if you submit a gift online, please mail the matching gift form with the employee information to the NOCC. The other thing is that, you know, there's other options. Workplace giving, like, for example, if you're a federal employee, you may donate to the NOCC in the Combined Federal Campaign, the CFC. And the NOCC is a member of the Cancer Cure, and we'll be located as Ovarian Cancer Coalition National. The other thing is that, of course, you can include in the gift in your will, if that's something that you'd like to do. And so basically the headquarters for this is out of Boca Raton, Florida. So again, what I'd like to do is, I'd just like to ask you, Luann, do you have any other information that you think might be helpful? Well, one thing before we forget is that the biggest fundraiser that you have, obviously, in the state of Illinois is the Big Walk that you have. And I was wondering, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about that?
Sure, and thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about our upcoming Walk for the Whisperer. This year is our ninth year for the Walk for the Whisperer at the Naperville River Walk, and we welcome everyone to come out if they can. It's a phenomenal event attended by families and friends of those affected by the disease, but also from the general community as a way to help us increase awareness. We attract over 3,000 people. We, in the past, have had as many as about 130 survivors attend, and we do a wonderful survivors acknowledgement and also recognition of them, and try to do things for our survivors as well as for our walkers, you know, to help us raise awareness. So it's just a great event. And again, it's at the Naperville River Walk on Saturday, May 6th, and registration starts at 8 o'clock, and the kickoff is at 9:30. And information can be found at our website, which is www.ovarian.org, and you just click on the Illinois site, and all the details are there. So we wish and welcome anyone who would like to come out to join us. That would be great. But also, if I could just for a minute talk about survivors and survivors activities and information, we have a wonderful resource of information for survivors of ovarian cancer and their families. We have our general publication. We also have a brochure for the newly diagnosed. We have issued a quality of life brochure. We've also issued a sexuality brochure that the Illinois Division actually funded, which we're very proud to fund. We also have patient-to-patient information. We have a wonderful network of survivors that we can network people with. So we want people who are or family members who have a diagnosis of ovarian cancer to call us as a resource. A lot of times we'll get calls from people wanting information for their parents, for their family members, and we're more than happy to send that out, again, free of charge.
Okay, great. Okay, well, I was just wondering, I really appreciate your time today, and I really hope that the listeners are going to be able to get some good information that they can, you know, talk about the women in their lives and, you know, let them know and be educated about this, because it's very important, and, you know, and I just wish I would have known this information, you know, prior to this, that maybe I could have helped my family friend. And so, you know, again, education is the key, and it's one of the things that I always talk about on my show is communicating. And, you know, and if you feel that you have any discomfort or anything like that at all, you know, go to the doctor, find out. It's better to have him say, oh, no, it's nothing to worry about, than to wait until it is too far along. So, again, Luann, I'd just like to thank you so much for being part of the show and taking the time today.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to do this, so thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, well, that's going to include this part of the show. So thank you for listening to the Ramble Redhead Show. Again, you can email me at rambleredhead@gmail.com. You can also go to my website, which is rambleredhead.blogspot.com, and I'd love to hear from you about this show as well as many others. So thank you for your time, and keep on listening.